Although the spirit whose figure was on the plate claimed the name of Rector, it was said by my friend that it was a spirit with whom they had no connection, a deceptive spirit, unknown to any of them. I sat down to obtain further information, but got nothing that was intelligible, and was obliged to cease. On the next day, when I had regained my usual passive state, the writing came unasked. Respecting the difficulties that had arisen in manifesting, I inquired if we could help in any way. Rector could not communicate with you on the account of your disturbed condition, consequent on the sitting which had severely taxed you. The information given was quite unreliable. Your mind was violently positive. You had assumed the picture to be of Rector, and he was not sufficiently acquainted with this kind of communication to know that your unhinged and feverish state, coupled with a positive and unimpressionable state of mind, made it impossible to convey any true information to you. When you feel such conditions present, seek no communications on any subject. They will be unreliable or imperfect under such circumstances, and in many cases hurtful. I was much annoyed, and complained that my scanty stock of faith would be drained by many such occurrences. It had never occurred before. It was replied, 3/4. You have never placed yourself in communication save when I, doctor, or someone who can warn and guard you has been present. You have done so when the spirits who control the physical elements in the circle have alone been present, and the results were violent and unmanageable. You were warned then, this is another warning. Your positive mind Rector could not influence, and your fevered state made it impossible to control you. Since then I have been scrupulously careful never to attempt automatic writing when I am physically ill or in pain, mentally worried or anxious, or near any person so suffering, or in the midst of any influences that might be disturbing. To this precaution I attribute much of the regular and equable character of my communications. As a rule, they are curiously fluent. The books in which they are written show no erasure or alteration, and the tone of the messages is very level and sustained. Keep yourself as passive and quiet as you can. When overtired with work, or fretted with care, or exhausted, do not attempt to seek communion with us. Do not add to the circle any new elements which do but disturb and perplex conditions. Suffer us to perfect our experiments before you interfere to spoil them. We will advise you of any change we wish in the composition of our circle. Do not alter the room in which you meet, and strive in so far as may be to meet with a passive mind and a healthy body. Yes, working all day with body and brain does not improve conditions, I suppose. But Sunday is generally worse. It is not a favorable day for us, because, when the strain is removed from mind and body, the reaction leaves the spirit disinclined for action and more apartment for repose. We are fearful of cultivating new manifestations with you, we fear experimenting with physical manifestations lest they do harm. Moreover, they are not our object, only subsidiary to it. They are but the signs which witness to our mission, and we do not desire that you rest in them. There is also a special reason why we are unable to manifest on Sunday for you. You do not know the difficulty which changes in conditions make to us. You have heard before that sitting down immediately after a meal is not good. The bodily conditions which we seek for are passivity and quickness of receptivity, but not the passivity which comes from sluggishness and torpor. No worse condition can be than that state of somnolence and torpor which follows on a plentiful meal during which stimulating drink has been taken. Such stimulus may aid there. Physical manifestations in some cases, but it is a bar to us. It opens the door for the advent of the more material spirits, and stops our power. We have frequently found our plans frustrated by such means. You would do well to think of this and guard yourselves against excess in any way when you are about to seek communion with us. The body should not be heated nor torpid with food, nor the mind drowsy and inactive. Both conditions prevent us from operating freely. They react on us, and sensibly mar our power. One such member in a circle, even as one ailing or suffering, will create conditions which we cannot overcome. But a weak body and temper disturbed by want of food is bad, surely? We do but counsel moderation. The body should be strengthened with food, but you should not sit down until the food is assimilated. You require moderate stimulant to fit you for your daily work, but that should be guardedly taken, and you should see that you do not enter into communion with us save under such conditions as we have stated. When mind or body is predisposed to sleep or indisposed to sustained attention, or sick or suffering, it is better not to sit save under direction. Equally, when the body is replete with food, the grosser spirits may be expected to be in the ascendant, and we are unable to operate. Even the physical phenomena are then of a ruder and more violent character, and not of the delicate and beautiful description which they would assume under more favorable circumstances. We do not desire extremes. A body wasted by fasting is not in any way profitable, but neither is a body which is clogged and loaded by overindulgence. Temperance and moderation are what help us. If you desire, friend, to facilitate our work, and to attain the best results, you should bring to the sitting a body healthy and sound, senses clear and watchful, and a mind passive and receptive. Then we can do for you more than you think. With a circle harmonious and properly constituted, the manifestations would be more delicate, and the teaching given more refined and trustworthy. Even the light of which you spoke under such conditions is pale, clear, and smokeless. Under unfavorable conditions would be dull, dirty, and smoky in appearance. It having been said that a friend and his wife who had frequently manifested were now removed to other spheres of work, I asked whether the marriage ties were perpetuated. That depends entirely on similarity of taste and equality of development. In the case of this being attained, the spirits can progress side by side. In our state we know only of community of taste and of association between those who are on the same plane and can be developed by mutual help. All things with us are subordinated in the education of the spirit, which is perpetually being developed. There can be no community of interest save between congenial souls. Consequently, no tie can be perpetuated which is not a help to progress. The uncongenial bonds which have embittered the soul's earth life, and marred its upward progress, cease with the bodily existence. The union of soul with soul, which in the body has been a source of support and assistance, is developed and increased after the spirit is free. The loving bonds which encircle such souls are the greatest incentive to mutual development, and so the relations are perpetuated, not because they have once existed, but because in the eternal fitness of things they minister to the spirit's education. In such cases the marriage tie is perpetuated, but only in such sort. At this time we had a number of large phosphorescent lights at our ordinary sittings, clear and of a pale yellow under good conditions, red, and smoky when anything was wrong. These lights were similar to the lamp borne by the spirit John King, and attained a great size under favorable conditions. As the bond of fellowship between friends endures, and is strengthened by mutual help and progress, all souls that are mutually helpful remain in loving intercourse so long as it is profitable for them. When the period arrives at which it is more profitable for them to separate, they go their way without sorrow, for they can still commune and share each other's interests. The reverse of such law would only perpetuate misery, and eternally bar progress. Nothing is permitted to do this. No. But some, I can conceive, may not be exactly on the same mental or moral plane, and yet be full of mutual love. Spirits filled with mutual love can never be really separated. You are hampered in understanding our state by considerations of time and space. You cannot understand how souls can be far apart, as you count space, and yet be, as you would say, intimately united. We know no time, no space. We could not obtain really close union with any spirit unless the intelligence be absolutely on the same mental and progressive plane. Indeed, any such union would be impossible for us. Soul may be linked with soul in bonds of affection, without an intimate connection such as we mean by being on the same plane of development. Love unites spirits at whatever distance. You see that in your low state of existence. The brother loves the brother, though vast expanse of ocean separates their homes, the long years have rolled away since the eye looked on the form and the ear listened to the words of the absent one. Their pursuits may be widely different, they may have no mutual idea, yet mutual love exists. The wife loves the degraded besotted ruffian who mutilates her body and strives to crush her spirit. The hour of dissolution will free her from slavery and pain. She will soar while he will sink, but the bond of love will not be snapped, though the spirits may no longer consort together. Even here space is annihilated, with us it does not exist. And so you may dimly understand that with us union means identity of development, community of interest, mutual and affectionate progression. We know no such indissoluble ties as exist with you. Then the Bible words are true, they neither marry nor are given in marriage, but are as the angels of God. It was truly said, we have before told you of the law of progress and of the law of association. They are invariable. Much that now seems good to you, you will throw aside with the body. Your state now colors your views. Much we are obliged to clothe in allegory, and to elucidate by borrowing your phraseology. So that you must not insist too strongly on literal meanings of words used by us to describe what exists only with us, which finds no counterpart in your world, and transcends your present knowledge, and which therefore can only be approximately described in language borrowed from Earth. This is a necessary caution. Yes. That would account for discrepancies in spirit communications in some cases. Such differences arise in many cases from want of knowledge on the part of the spirits themselves, from their inability to get their ideas through the channel of communication, from imperfect conditions at the time of the communication, and from other causes. Doubtless, one cause is, that curious and foolish questions bring foolish answers from spirits on the plane of the questioner. This was on page 46. Section V. But would not a high spirit endeavor to raise the questioner instead of answering a fool according to his folly? Yes, were it possible, but the foolish frame of mind precludes too frequently such raising. Like attracts like, and the silly, curious inquirers who ask from no desire for information, but only to gratify a whim or an idle curiosity, or to entangle us in our talk, is answered, if at all, by a spirit like himself. Such is not the frame of mind in which to seek communion with us. A reverent, earnest mind gains for itself that information and instructions which it is capable of receiving. The self-conceited, flippant, ignorant, and curious receive only what they seek, and are sent away without reply, on with such as suits their query. Flee such. They are empty and foolish. Was page 47. Section 7. Some communications respecting the Neoplatonic philosophy followed. A spirit with whose features I was familiar had been photographed, and his dress was something I was unused to. I inquired, and was told that the conditions under which the partial materialization necessary for photography are possible differ from those in which the spirit presents himself to clairvoyant vision. The account of the special phase of the Neoplatonic teaching was most minute and entirely new to me. Sufism, the ecstatic meditation that endeavors by transport to throw off all that is not God, and to attain truth by transfusion into the divine, was expounded at length, and illustrated in the person of one of its professors. I thus learned much that I have since been able to trace in operation, and especially in the teachings of the spirit in question, albeit toned down and modified by experience. After this there was a short cessation. And another evidence of imposture at a circle which I attended caused me much questioning. I was urged to refrain from attending any circles at all so long as our own was held, and it was explained that it was of greatest importance to avoid coming into contact with mediums, or strong magnetic influence of any kind. I should act as a disturbing element in other circles, and bring away disturbing influences to our own. some remarkable extracts from old poems, chiefly of Lige Yates, were now written by a spirit who seemed to delight in such work, who did nothing else, and who used a very marked handwriting. Afterwards, at a séance held June 13, 1873, many questions were put on points of theology, and a long trance address was delivered, which was partially taken down at the time, but many points were necessarily omitted, or imperfectly recorded. On the following day, without questioning, it was written by the same communicating spirit who had spoken on the previous evening: There was much in what was said last night that was imperfectly said, and hurriedly, and that was not accurately preserved in the record which was taken at the time. It is of the last importance that, on a subject so momentous, we should speak with care, and that you should understand exactly what we wish to convey. We therefore wish to state more clearly what was said imperfectly to the circle. The conditions of control do not always enable us to be so precise in speech as we are studious to be when communicating thus with you. Perfect isolation commands conditions suitable for precision and accuracy. We are dealing with the divine mission which we have in charge. Of the many difficulties which beset our path, this is one of the most considerable, that those who are most congenial to our purpose, and whose cooperation we most desire, are usually so hampered by preconceived theological notions, or are so fearful of what seems to contradict some things which they have learned, that we are unable to influence them, and grieve sorrowfully to find that which is derived from God charged on the adversaries, and boldly attributed to an all-powerful and malignant devil. Of all classes of our opponents, these are to us the most sad. The pseudo-scientific man, who will look at nothing save through his own medium, and on his own terms, who will deal with us only so that he may be allowed to prescribe means of demonstrating us to be deluders, liars, figments of a disordered brain, he is of little moment to us. His blinded eye cannot see, and his cloudy intelligence, befogged and cramped with lifelong prejudice, can be of little service to us. He can at best penetrate but little into the mysteries of communion with the spheres, and the foundation of knowledge that he could acquire, though useful, and valuable even, would be of little service to us in our special work. We deal with other issues than those which would principally engage the attention of those few men of science who design to notice the phenomenal aspect of our work. The mind long trained in observation of the phenomena of physics is best devoted to the elucidation of those facts which come within its province. Our sphere is different, connected rather with the influence of spirit upon spirit and the knowledge of spirit destiny that we can impart. And the ignorant and uncultured mind which knows not of what we would tell, and cannot know until a long course of preliminary training has prepared the way, this class of mind, though hereafter it may attain to a plane of knowledge on which we can work, is of no service now. To the proud, the arrogant, the wise in their own conceits, the children of routine and respectability, we can say very little. The more physical evidence is necessary to reach them. The story which we are charged with would be but an idle tale to them. Is it to the receptive souls who know of God and heaven, and love and charity, and who desire to know of the hereafter and of the haven to which they tend, that we turn with earnest longing? But, alas! Too often we find the natural religious instincts, which are garden planted and spirit nurtured, choked or distorted by the cramping influence of a human theology, the imperceptible growth of long ages of ignorance and folly. They are armed at all points against the truth. Do we speak of a revelation of the Great Father? They already have a revelation which they have decided to be complete. Do we tell them of its inconsistencies, and point out that nowhere pretends to the finality and infallibility which they would assign it? They reply to us with stray words from the formularies of a church, or by an opinion borrowed and adapted from some person whom they have chosen to consider infallibly inspired. They apply to us a test drawn from some one of the sacred records which was given at a special time for a special purpose, and which they imagine to be of universal applications. Do we point to our credentials, and to the miracles, so-called, which attest the reality of our mission, even as they attested the mission of those whom we influenced of old? They tell us that the age of miracles is past, and that only the inspired of the Holy Ghost long centuries ago were permitted to work such wonders as evidence of divine teaching. They tell us that the devil, whom they have imagined for themselves, has the power to counterfeit God's work, and they consign us and our mission to darkness and outer antagonism to God and goodness. They would be willing to help us, for, indeed, we say that which is probable, but that we are of the devil. We must be, because in the Bible it is said that false and deceiving spirits will come, and so we must be the deceivers. It must be so. For did not a holy and elevated teacher prophesy of those who should deny the Son of God? And do not we practically remove him and his work from the place in which God has placed it and him? It must be so, for do we not place human reason above faith? Do we not preach and teach a seductive gospel of good works, and give credit to the doer of them? And is not all this the work of the archfiend transformed into an angel of light, and striving to win souls to ruin? It is such arguments, honestly put forward by those whose respect we fain would win, that are to us a bitter sorrow. They are in many cases loving, earnest souls, who need but the progressive tendency to make them bright lights in the world's gloom. To them we fain would give our message, but before we can build on the sure foundations which they already have of knowledge of God and duty, we must perforce clear away the rubbish which renders further elevation unsafe. Religion, to be worthy the name, must have its two sides, the one pointing to God, the other to man. What has the received faith, which is called orthodox by its professors, to say on these points, and wherein do we differ in our message, and how far is such difference on our part in accord with reason? For, at the very outset, we claim, as the only court to which we can as yet appeal, the reason which is implanted in man. We claim it, for it was by reason that the sages settled the list of the writings which they decided to be the exclusive and final revelation of God. To reason they appealed for their decision. To reason we appeal too. Or do our friends claim that divine guidance prescribed for them what should be for all time the body of revealed truth? We, too, are the messengers of the Most High, no less surely sent than the spirits who guided the Hebrew seers, and who ministered to those whose fear settled the divine word. We are as they, our message as their message, only more advanced, our God their God, only more clearly revealed, less human, more divine. Whether the appeal be to divine inspiration or not, human reason, guided doubtless by spirit agency, but still reason, sways the final decision. And those who reject this appeal are out of their own mouths convicted of folly. Blind faith can be no substitute for reasoning trust. For the faith is faith that either has grounds for its trust or not. In the former case the ground is reasonable, in which case reason again is the ultimate judge, or it is not, in which case it would commend itself to none. But if faith rests on no ground at all, we need not further labor to show it baseless and untrustworthy. To reason, then, we turn. How far are we proved reasonably to be of the devil? How far is our creed an evil one? In what respect are we chargeable with diabolic tendency? These are points on which we will instruct you. This was page, 50. Section 8. After a long trance address on the subjects dealt with in the last communication, the writing was resumed on the following day, by the same spirit, imperator using the ordinary amanuensis, who was known as rector. After this was written, a seance was held in which some discussion took place on what had been said. Something further was added, and especially an attempt was made to refute the charges that I brought against the teaching given. From the standpoint that I then occupied, it seemed to me that such teachings might be called by opponents atheistic or diabolic. I, at any rate, should call them latitudinarian, and I maintained, at some length, views more nearly approaching to orthodox teaching. In order to follow the argument which I was now entering upon, it is necessary for the reader to remember that I was trained in strict accordance with Protestant church principles, that I had spent much time in reading the theologies of the Greek and Roman churches, and that I had accepted, as most nearly according with the views at which I had arrived, the tenets of that portion of the Church of England called Anglican. I had seen cause to revise some of my strong beliefs, but substantially I was what would be called a sound high churchman. From this time commences that state, to which I shall have often to refer, of great spiritual exaltation, during which I was profoundly conscious of the presence and influence of one commanding intelligence, and of an action on my mind which eventuated in a development of thought amounting to nothing short of spiritual regeneration. You have objected to our teachings that they are not consistent with the received creed of orthodoxy. We have more to say on this subject. Religion, the spirit's healthful life, has two aspects, the one pointing to God, the other to man. What says the spirit creed of God? In place of an angry, jealous tyrant, it reveals a loving Father who is not loving in name alone, but in very deed and truth, into whose dealings naught but love can enter, who is just and good and full of affection to the lowest of his creatures. It does not recognize any need of propitiation towards this God. It rejects as false any notion of this divine being vindictively punishing a transgressor, or requiring a vicarious sacrifice for sin. Still less does it teach that this omnipotent being is enthroned in a heaven where his pleasure consists in the homage of the elect, and in the view of the tortures of the lost, who are forever excluded in quenchless misery from light and hope. No such anthropomorphism finds any place in our creed. God, as we know him in the operation of his laws, is perfect, pure, loving, and holy, incapable of cruelty, tyranny, and other such human vices, viewing error with sorrow as knowing that sin contains its own sting, but eager to alleviate the smart by any means consistent with the immutable moral laws to which all alike are subject. God, the center of light and love. God, operating in strict accordance with those laws which are a necessity of orderly existence. God, the grand object of our adoration, never of our dread. We know of him as you cannot know, as you cannot even picture in imagination, yet none has seen him, nor are we content with the metaphysical sophistries with which prying curiosity and over-subtle speculation have obscured the primary conception of God amongst men. We pry not. The first conception with you even is grander, nobler, more sublime. We wait for higher knowledge. You must wait too. On relations between God and his creatures we speak at large. Yet here, too, we clear off many of the minute points of human invention which have been from age to age accumulated round and over the central truths. We know nothing of election of a favored few. The elect are they who work out for themselves a salvation according to the laws which regulate their being. We know nothing of the potency of blind faith or credulity. We know, indeed, the value of a trustful, receptive spirit, free from the littleness of perpetual suspicion. Such is God-like, and draws down angel guidance. But we abjure and denounce that most destructive doctrine that faith, belief, assent to dogmatic statements, have power to erase the traces of transgression, that an earth lifetime of vice and sloth and sin can be wiped away, and the spirit stand purified by a blind acceptance of a belief, of an idea, of a fancy, of a creed. Such teaching has debased more souls than anything else to which we can point. Nor do we teach that there is a special and potent efficacy in any one belief to the exclusion of others. We do not believe that truth is the perquisite of any creed. In all there is a germ of truth, in all an accretion of error. We know, as you know not, the circumstances which decide to what special form of faith a mortal shall give his adherence, and we value it accordingly. We know exalted intelligences who stand high in spirit life, who were enabled to progress in spite of the creed which they professed on earth. We value only the earnest seeking after truth which may distinguish the professors of creeds the most widely dissimilar. We care not for the minute discussions which men delight in. We shrink from those curious pryings into mysteries transcending knowledge which characterize your theologies. The theology of the Spirit is simple and confined to knowledge. We value at nothing mere speculation. We care not for sectarianism, save that we know it to be a mischievous provoker of rancor, and spite, and malice, and ill will. We deal with religion as it affects us and you in simpler sort,